now they're getting wild for me. And all the pretty chicks all wanna smile at me. These rap cats, man, they all got this style for me. And if I ever see them, man, they probably bow to me. And when this beat drop, I know they...
Welcome into the Saturday Show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. I'm Jay Catch, joined as always by Michelle Bodkin. And Michelle, you've spent a lot of time in Las Vegas of late, haven't you?
More than I ever thought I would, to be honest, even with having family down there. It's been a little insane.
I can understand that. No, good to have you back in town. Obviously, crazy week down there with conference tournaments ongoing. Our final team dropped out last night. Speaking of Utah State, hard-fought loss to San Diego State. Okay, first off, how was, I guess, because you spent like what? You had two quick trips down there essentially, right?
Yeah, two quick back-to-back trips. I scheduled it in case people made a run that it could have been one big long trip, or if I needed to shorten it a bit and then come home and then go back, it would work that way as well. And it ended up being the latter part where I came home for a couple of days and then was right back in Las Vegas again. But it was a good time. It was a good time, but definitely happy to be home. Definitely happy to be in my own bed, my own space, not be in a hotel room, especially since my last hotel room for the tournament really sucked. I had like a big wall blocking my window. So my room felt like a dungeon. I was done. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Good times, you know. You deal with what you got to deal with. But yeah, that's always like you're like looking outside. You're like, hold on. I have a window here, but I can't see anything. This is great, let me tell you.
I mean, it was crazy. I literally could not tell whether it was daylight, nighttime, didn't matter. If it was raining outside, like, I couldn't tell if it was sunny. Like, it was crazy how dark that room was.
So it's the perfect place if you need to just, like, pass out for, like, 24 hours. You can do that.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Fair enough. But we got a lot to cover ahead on today's show. We're going to talk a lot of college basketball, some college football with spring camps ongoing. Oh, we got a lot to talk about. But, Michelle, you got a highlight of the week for us.
It's just kind of been fun doing some of the last little bit of seasons for people. I know that Utah basketball didn't quite end the way that they wanted it to, but I just thought it was really, really touching how much they, like, care. And how much they were really trying to get it done for Brandon Carlson. I just thought that was really cool. And then last night for senior night with the Red Rocks as well, seeing the seniors go out on a really, really high note was very cool. I cried a bunch, like, because you could just tell how much it means to them. And so it's like I said, it's just a very touching thing. And I thought the two best moments from last night were Alani Sabado, who is a senior that maybe fans aren't quite as familiar with because she hasn't competed a whole lot, but she's been a consistent piece of the Bars lineup, and it's been a little bit up and down for her. She's had some really great moments and some really not great moments. She's recorded a couple of falls this year on the event, and she had one the week before at Arizona that was pretty bad, and she came back and she rocked it. So that was really cool. And then seeing Abby Paulson get a 10 on beam was also really cool. She got one clear back in her freshman year, and it just feels like that was kind of a carrot that's just been dangling in front of her ever since. And to see her finally get another one on her last night performing in the Huntsman Center, I just thought was so cool.
Hey, that's awesome. That's always a good time when you see athletes like that. You've kind of – and as media, we don't necessarily have, like, I guess, a super personal relationship with these athletes. But at the same time, you've been covering them for so long, you have a relationship with them at some level.
Yeah. And, when you look at, I think, this core of gymnasts that are moving on, it just feels like they've been here forever.
Sure.
And so it does feel maybe a little more personal go around, just because I think so much of it is because they've been through a lot of hard things, right? Like, these were the girls that came in and were freshmen during the COVID year that got shorned. And then, you know, these are the girls that were also friends with Aaron Lowe and had to deal with that. And then to turn around in their senior year, have the upheaval with Tom Farden and the abuse allegations, like they've just been through a lot. And so it feels like they've been a cornerstone of that program for a long, long time, I think just because they've been through so much. And so to kind of finally realize like that they are going to be moving on feels a little weird.
Well, hey, I get what you're saying there. All right, we got Jason Jones producing for us today. Jason, you got a highlight of the week on your end?
Of course I do.
Okay, what do you got?
So it's a highlight that I will repeat again next Thursday and Friday again. So I've always tried to look for jobs throughout my career. My main job, not my part-time sports producing job, but like my main job where I can like work in an office or from home, where that gives me the freedom to watch as much sports during the day as I can if there's any sports on during the day, which of course there is at this time of year. So Thursday and Friday, there I am sitting in my desk at home doing my work, but with extra monitors up, laptops, phones, and whatever I could so I can watch as much college basketball as humanly possible.
You're sick.
I am sick. I am dead sick. Now, of course, because it's only the conference tournaments, there's only a couple of games on at a time, unlike next Thursday and Friday where there'll be four games on at a time, and I will have four
all
screens up. I will have them all up. Yep. I'll have my work laptop and four other screens that have the basketball on them. Absolutely.
Jason, I watch a lot of college basketball, just part of the job. I have never done that for a conference tournament, so props to you, sir. That is sicko's mode right there. NCAA tournament is one thing. Trust me, I will be with you. I will be watching a bunch of them. By the way, we are going to have, I guess I can lift the lid on this a little bit. We are going to have two watch parties for our listeners at JCW. So Thursday, the Zone's going to be broadcasting live from JCW's in American Fork. If you want to stop by, 10 to 6 p.m., we'll have hosts and whatnot down there, a live reaction as the games go final. And then Friday will be the Harriman location of JCW. From 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. as well. It should be a really, really fun time. I'd love for all of y'all to come out and hang out with us because that's what we'll be doing. We'll be tracking all of the games. So, Jason, if you need a place to come watch the games, come and hang out, all right?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Highlight of my week real quick before we kind of dive into the nuts and bolts portion of today's show goes back to just watching kind of what's happening in college basketball. And what I mean by this is, Michelle, it's been kind of crazy to watch Utah do what they're doing in the Pac-12. It's crazy to think that the Pac-12 basketball season is over after tonight. But the Big 12, I've been watching plenty of Big 12 basketball all season long, tracking BYU as heavily as I do, and watching just kind of the style of play that's evolving in that league is crazy to me. And it's just been a really, really fun week to just watch how this league is coming together in terms of its overall prowess, and also considering that, hey, Utah, Arizona, ASU, and also Colorado are coming in. It should be a really, really fun Big 12 moving forward. I know it's not necessarily it's a highlight of the week, but it's got me excited for the future, at least of basketball for that league.
Yeah, the basketball in that league is going to be very insane. I think both men's and women's.
Yes.
So I think that is one thing that's going to come together very nicely for that league. Some of the other stuff, remains to be seen. We'll see how it goes. But I think for sure the basketball is going to be on point.
Yeah, sure. All right, let's talk a little bit more about college hoops. You were down there as Utah fell in the quarterfinals of the Pac-12 tournament to the aforementioned Colorado Buffaloes. Michelle, I was watching that game, and I stayed up late, and I was watching, and like at halftime, I'm like, okay, Utah's in this. They're hanging with Colorado. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if they can just find a way to get past this, who knows what might be possible? Because I think we all saw last night with Oregon taking down Arizona.
Nuts.
Crazy, crazy scenes. But you obviously have to win to get yourself that opportunity. And in the second half, Utah, which was playing well in the first half, it seemed like things just kind of fell apart. Give me your perspective sitting down there in the T-Mobile Center.
I think, I'm trying to remember exactly when things really kind of felt like they were getting away from them. They kept it close through a good chunk of the second half.
Yeah.
And it was really kind of that last part where it just felt like all of a sudden they ran out of gas. And I mean, understandably so, right? You don't have Raleigh Wooster. You haven't had Will Exact Jr. the entire season. You have a Brandon Carlson that's operating with a broken wing, and so I think his minutes are a little bit limited. So it puts a lot of strain and pressure on everyone else to kind of try and push forward and make up for, you know, some of those bodies that are missing or maybe aren't able to perform the way that you're used to them performing. And I just, to me, they just look tired, you know, whereas Colorado looked like they could keep going all night. So I think that was really kind of the biggest difference in that game, is they just ran out of steam. I don't think it was a lack of want. I don't think it was not being talented enough. I just really think they were tired and just didn't have enough fresh bodies to kind of keep going through a game that was very physical and intense, and people, you know, were trading baskets back and forth. It was very fast paced, especially the first part. So I think that was just really kind of, you know, what it was, and it's unfortunate and it sucks, but that's, you know, that's just sometimes the way it goes.
Well, and yeah, that is the way it goes sometimes. And the crazy thing about this is, I'm just on the flip side for BYU. BYU, I'm not sure, could have played much better in their tournament opener against UCF. Now, they allowed UCF to go on a crazy run to get within three of that game, and then they closed the game on a nice run to just finish it out. But then the next day, Michelle, after playing as well as they did against UCF, the very next day against Texas Tech, about as poorly, honestly, as BYU could have played. So you kind of Utah, in a way, got that whole, like, play well and play poorly in one game across two halves, where BYU got it across two games. But it's kind of the nature of college basketball, and especially the way that BYU prefers to play, just in their circumstance, where they're just shooting threes without a conscience in the world, and it's just who they are. When they're on, they're as good as anybody in the country, seemingly. But when they're off, as they were against Texas Tech, well, guess what? Just as quickly, you're right out of it.
Yeah, I think that's perhaps the biggest problem when you're a team that relies on the three, the way that BYU does, the way that the Utah women's basketball team does, is when you're having an off night with that strategy, it all of a sudden becomes a real, real grind to get anything going. And so I think that's really interesting, the juxtaposition, right, within a 24-hour span of seeing a team, you know, playing at its very, very best and then playing at its very, very poorest. But I think that's, you know, that's why we sit and watch March Madness, right? Like that's why March is so fun as far as basketball is concerned, is because literally anything can happen. I know Craig Smith, you know, hinted at that throughout Utah's time in the tournament, that that March is just crazy, and you just never know what's going to happen. We saw that, you know, I think in several instances with Oregon beating Arizona last night. So it's unfortunate, but all BYU can do at this point in time is, you know, rest up and prepare for the NCAA tournament, which, you know, I think they have a great opportunity there.
Well, they do, and that's the thing about this. And I've been tracking all the bracketology. I'm looking at that, and both for BYU and Utah State. And it was unfortunate for Utah because, had Utah beaten Colorado, Michelle, they're right back on the bubble. That was what was there to play for Utah, and unfortunately came up a little bit short. I'm assuming, and you, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm assuming they're going to try and pursue an NIT berth, will they?
I have it on pretty good authority that they are expecting to be in the NIT.
Okay,
so
perfect.
We'll see.
So,
we'll see what happens. But I heard from a little bird that they feel pretty confident about that.
Well, and as they should, because the way they've also revamped the NIT now is it does favor Power Six, I guess is the best term to call them, Power Six programs. And if Utah wants to play in the postseason, they'll be in that NIT, and it'll be an opportunity for them to play. I guess the other question for Utah before we get back to BYU, do you think Brandon Carlson, because he had a pretty bulky brace on that arm of his, do you think he will try and play in the postseason, or do you think he's going to call it good?
You know, based off of his comments after the Colorado loss, I expect him to play, or at least try to play. I think it means a lot to him. I think he loves his teammates. His teammates love him right back. And the impression I got is they want to play as much basketball together as they possibly can for as long as they can.
Well,
so.
As they should, and that's the thing about this, is that you get so close to these guys when you're on a team like that, and you've been traveling together for months at that point. Like, why would you want to stop playing in many respects? Like that. So, yeah, I'm actually glad to hear that. Now, on the BYU front and Utah State front, they both knew they were going to be firmly in the tournament. Reading up on Joe Lunardi this morning, and that's the interesting part about this, Michelle, is all these bracketologists out there have got opinions of where these teams are ultimately going to land. But the good news, as of this morning, from Joe Lunardi, who's kind of the guy I pay attention the most to, and maybe I'm crazy for saying that, he's got BYU as a 5 seed, and he's got him playing in Salt Lake City.
I mean, let's bring the energy, right? If we're going to have a competition here, if we're going to have the opportunity to host a competition here, I think, you know, the opportunity to have one of the local teams represented, or both of the local teams represented. Obviously, even if Utah had made the NCAA tournament, they're not going to be able to play in the Salt Lake City bracket. They would have been sent somewhere else anyway, but
yes.
BYU and Utah State, of course, could play in the Salt Lake bracket. And so
he's currently got Utah State slated to go to Omaha, but that is still very much in play. They could end up as a 6 or 7 seed still in Salt Lake City in certain scenarios. It'd be
right.
fun to have them both in Salt Lake City, no doubt.
Right, right. So, you know, if that opportunity presents itself, I say, why not? and what a great opportunity for those local schools to be able to come and cheer on and support their team through kind of that first part of the NCAA tournament. It doesn't happen a whole lot. And so, you know, when it does happen, I think, you know, embrace it and run with it.
Well, so here's the scenario. So BYU currently is the 5 seed in the West bracket, which is the Los Angeles bracket. And so they're the 5 seed there. They would be playing 12 seed Grand Canyon out of the WAC, which would be, I actually think, a pretty good matchup, because Grand Canyon's not a bad program. Anybody mm-hmm. who's watched UVU or any of the WAC teams, Southern Utah, would know that they're a pretty good team. But then also in Salt Lake, the 7 seed in Salt Lake is Nevada. So in theory, all you got to do is to flip the Midwest region with Utah State taking on Texas A&M and Omaha, and just send Utah State to the Salt Lake bracket, taking on Michigan State and Tom Izzo. That would be fun.
Yeah, that would be quite a game. I think there would be butts in the seats for that one.
You think?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. The Salt Lake, when we host, we haven't done it for 5 years. When we, and I speak we just generally, but when we have the NCAA tournament here, the Delta Center, back then it was Vivint Smart Home Arena, I believe, but mm-hmm. it's awesome to have it, because fans show up from the teams, obviously, that are playing, but college hoop heads here locally, Jason Jones probably chief among them. Jason, you'd be going to all these games, I'm imagining.
Yeah, well, except that I have to work. But
hey, come on! No. You said you did your job, so you could do this.
Yeah, actually,
that's what sick days are for.
The working is on our sister station KSL doing sports updates. So that's I'll be looking out the window at all of the people going into the Delta Center to watch the games, and I'll just be in the studio over there doing
yourself.
But I get to do updates, man. I'm okay with that. That's good.
Sure. That is okay. Looking at this, Michelle, the first 4 games, they have obviously the teams that play on Tuesday and Wednesday. There is one game among them I need to happen more than others, and there's one reason why. It requires one word. Patino.
Yeah, well, I mean, wherever Patino goes, a circus follows, right?
Well, yeah. Well, hey, we've got St. John's with obviously Rick, obviously Slick Rick, who's had a well-traveled career at this point.
To say the least.
Yes, yes, very much so. But he could be facing his son, Rick Jr., or Richard as people like to call him, who is the head coach of the New Mexico Lobos, and currently Joe Lunardi's got them slated to play in a first 4 game in Dayton as 11 seeds. I need this to happen.
You need the Patino tourney to be a thing?
Oh, come on now. Let's go. We got to see this happen. Because that would be just so much fun to see those two, see father versus son, and see who comes out on top.
I mean, again, this is another one of those cases. How often does that happen, or does that opportunity present itself? Yeah. So, I mean, I can be on board with that. Let's go.
Listen, NCAA Tournament Committee, I know you don't know who I am, or you're probably not ever going to listen to this show, but I'm going to say right now, you need to make that happen. It has to.
Do it for Jake Hatch.
Yes. Well, here, I'm not the only one, though.
Oh, no doubt.
Think about it. Like, the fact that you have the two Patinos, the storylines write themselves, and it would be just an incredible game. Because remember, earlier this season, Rick Pitino got up there on the podium after a game and just essentially said, my team's not good enough to compete. Since that time, Michelle, his team is undefeated until they lost in the Big East tournament. They went like 6-7-0 and then finally crashed out of the Big East tournament. So was it a motivational ploy? If so, it worked.
I would guess it probably was a motivational ploy, but I mean, either way, it worked out, right?
Yeah, it did, no doubt. So it's a really fun time, obviously, and looking forward to this. And the nice part is it looks like we have at least two teams. I thought Weber State, the way the Big Sky tournament was panning out earlier this week, Michelle, I don't know how much you were paying attention to this. They had their top two seeds knocked out in their first round games. So Weber State is the four seed, had like a clear path. If they were able to kind of roll through and get to the NCAA tournament. But then Danny Sprinkle's old program, Montana State, beat them as a – now they're – and by the way, Montana State won it for a third straight year. They're going to be a 500 team playing in the Big Dance after they won the Big Sky title.
Again, we talked about it. It's March. Anything can happen. So
that's true. And they currently have Montana State slated as one of the two 16 seeds playing one of the first four games with the right to go and play Zach Edey and Purdue in Indianapolis. So, hey.
Well – We'll see how that possibly goes.
Have you signed up for our bracket challenge on KSLSports.com, by the way?
I haven't yet. I do have the email pulled up so that I will remember to do it because I know I need to get it done here pretty quick.
Yeah, the brackets obviously come out tomorrow afternoon. You'll actually have live programming. We'll have Westwood One revealing those brackets here on the KSL Sports Zone. You can tune into that at 4 o'clock. Plenty of coverage, obviously, in the week to come, getting ready for those games. And obviously, we'll have a keen interest on both BYU and Utah State where they're playing. We'll also have full play-by-play coverage of Utah State wherever they play. Scott Gerard will be on the call of that. And it's a really, really fun time of year, Michelle. March, there are not many months in the sports calendar like March Madness.
No, and I think we'd be remiss to not point out the Utah women are going to get picked up.
Yeah, and that bracket comes out tomorrow evening as well. Is it 6 o'clock?
Yes, and they are having a watch party. I will be at that to get their reaction to wherever they get sent. I know that there was maybe some talk. There were some kind of crazy upsets on the women's side as far as conference tournaments go that possibly opened up the possibility of them slipping into a four seed and possibly hosting again here. I think it's still maybe a little bit of a pipe dream, but we'll see how it all plays out. But they should get a good draw, and hopefully they'll be in a position where they can make some noise on the women's side in the tournament.
Give me your sense for how the Utah women are looking going into the tournament. I know they've had kind of a topsy-turvy season is the way I would describe it, just with some of the injuries they've dealt with. But how do they feel slash look right now as they head into postseason?
You know what? I think they're a really good, solid team. And you're right. They've had some ups and downs with the injuries. And the Pac-12 is always good in women's basketball. Mm-hmm. But it felt like this year was just like – chef's kiss. Like, I mean, it from top to bottom, it just felt like the conference was extra, extra good. So you deal with some injuries and having to play that kind of a schedule. And as Lynn kind of pointed out, you know, you get so familiar because you play everybody kind of twice. Mm-hmm. And so you just understand and know each other so well and how to beat each other. And so it can kind of, when you have that many good teams, it can just get really tough to win consistently. But on the flip side, it's great preparation to go into March Madness where you're now facing teams that aren't as familiar with you and don't know you as well. But you're already kind of battle tested as far as playing tournament level games. So the confidence is really high amongst them that they could possibly, you know, do some great things this year again.
Now, Charlie Cream, he's the bracketologist for the women's side on ESPN, Michelle. He's currently got Utah playing in Blacksburg, so Virginia Tech hosting out there. But he got them playing in Richmond, and that seems like a Okay. Richmond's close to home. You can clear across the country for Utah. That seems like a little more of a dangerous alignment there for Utah. So hopefully they can move up another seed. They're currently a 5 seed in the projections.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we'll see. It'll be interesting. I'm curious to see how this all plays out. But the nice part is there's interest on both the men's and women's side of things, and we'll be able to kind of track that throughout the upcoming week and hopefully weeks, Michelle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I really do.
All right. We will come back on the other side. We'll dig in a little bit to the Utah Jazz, continue with the basketball theme. Come up at 11 o'clock. We'll dig into spring football. I know Michelle's been covering the first week of Utah spring ball from a little bit from afar, obviously being down in Las Vegas, but we'll talk about that. We'll also check in on BYU as well. We got plenty to come. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Michelle Bodkin, Jay Catch along for the ride here on this Saturday morning. Hope you all are doing well out there. All right, Michelle, so the Utah Jazz welcomed Quinn Snyder back to the Delta Center last night for the first time since he stepped down from his position as head coach for the Utah Jazz, and then sent him away with a loss.
I'm sure as an institution that probably felt good and a little justifying, I guess.
Well, the thing about this is there was an interesting game in the sense that the Hawks are in a similar position in the Eastern Conference to what the Jazz are right now, where they're on the outside looking in when it comes to the NBA play-in / postseason. And it's also for the Jazz, as they kind of try and strategically position themselves for the NBA draft and the lottery. Well, this was a game that you moved essentially above, behind the Hawks in the playoff line and where the lottery would shake out. So you want one of those quote-unquote clutch losses to help with your lottery odds. That was not the play last night, if that was what you were looking for.
I'm still a little confused as to perhaps what the Jazz are looking for.
Well, I think all of us are a little bit, but that's okay.
If the lottery pick is what they're in the hunt for, then not well done. If still trying to like stay alive and potentially do something this season is what they're after, then well done.
Sure, and that is a good point. Last night was an interesting game because it was back and forth. These two teams were very evenly matched. DeJounte Murray led the way with 33 points for Atlanta, to lead all scorers, if I recall correctly. And then Keontae George, who continues just to be an incredible player. Michelle, you know this as well as anybody. There's usually a rookie wall that a lot of rookies in the NBA hit because mm-hmm. in college hoops, you play as many as maybe as 40 games in a season. An NBA regular season is 82. Like, it's more than double what you will play preseason, regular season, and postseason with college hoops, maybe push into the 41, 42 games in the college game. But eventually guys hit a wall. But Keontae George, if he has hit that wall, I have not seen it with my own eyes.
And excuse me if I'm like totally wrong on this.
Yeah.
Wasn't he a little slow to start the season?
He's had his up and downs.
Okay.
He was so good in remember during the summer league, he was like Mr. Everything. And then the season, yeah, I started and was like, okay, he's adjusting to playing in the NBA. But I've got to say, in terms of a rookie adjustment overall for Keontae George, it's been a pretty smooth transition. It's been frankly impressive to watch him do what he's done, because a lot of guys take time to adjust to the NBA game. And he was a guy, I remember watching him at Baylor, Michelle. He was asked to play out of position, and he actually bulked up to play at Baylor, and it really hurt his draft stock. But for what the Jazz saw something and said, you know what, we're going to take him. They brought him in. He lost the weight that he'd kind of bulked up to play, essentially like out of a swing role, mm-hmm. A swingman role for Baylor. And he looked more like what he had shown in high school. And the Jazz have benefited to a large degree because, he's been superb for a rookie.
You know, I get there's still games left to play, so maybe it's coming on the back end. But maybe this is a case of, you know, even though you said that it's been a relatively smooth transition for him, that he kind of took some of his lumps up front more. Well, so. And is now just in a position where he feels comfortable and he can move forward and do what they need him to do, which I think is also impressive from the standpoint. To me, I think more than anywhere else, there's probably, I think, the biggest difference in, and I think it's just because of the age that guys typically enter the NBA versus like NFL. Sure.
Yeah.
Is the body type. You know, these guys can still look maybe a little bit young.
They're more than young.
When they show up in the NBA and are expected to sometimes go against, you know, 30-year-olds, 35-year-olds, they're just a lot more established.
Sure.
So I think even from that perspective, it's pretty impressive that Keyonte George has managed that well, because I think on top of just having to deal with playing, you know, almost double the games, you're also dealing with playing against grown men you're still kind of developing.
Just ask LeBron James. Come on. That guy's almost 40 years old, and he's still doing his thing, and he's more than double some of these guys' age. It's absolutely incredible. And the other thing about this is, Michelle, and I just saw this come across a little bit earlier. Tonight, just comes from Jazz Lead on social media on X/Twitter. It says, tonight's Utah Jazz starting lineup is slated to be the youngest starting lineup in Utah Jazz history. It'll also be the first time, Michelle, in NBA history that a team starts three rookies that are age 20 or younger.
Yeah. It's very interesting to me, the age gap that exists in the NBA. It's pretty extreme, actually, when you really stop and think about it. So, good for them. Good for them. And I'm looking at one of Ben Anderson's articles. You know, they did this without Laurie Markkanen, mm-hmm. Jordan Clarkson, and Chris Dunn, some of their more established players. So I think that's a huge deal, and I think that speaks – I get that Atlanta's not the best team, but as we see a lot of times, sometimes that doesn't matter. It's just about, you know, getting things done and handling your biz with the cards in hand. And the Jazz did that last night. So good on them.
Yeah, and that's the fun part about it, is you just kind of go out there and you just do your thing. And the other thing about this is, you talked a little bit earlier on about Keyonte George taking his lumps early. He did, because what it is, the other rookies, Bryce Sensabaugh, who's actually had some nice moments of late, as well as Taylor Hendricks, they both spent a large majority of the season in the G League, whereas Keyonte George, he's spent essentially the entirety of the season in the Jazz lineup. So he took his lumps early. There's no doubt about that, and he benefited from that. And yes, Atlanta's not necessarily the juggernaut that what you're going to see tonight and Monday are. That's the Minnesota Timberwolves coming to town, who are battling for the top seed in the West. Now, Rudy Gobert, obviously former Jazz man, he is slated as questionable for tonight's game, Michelle. He has been dealing with a rib contusion. He took a shot to the midsection, and they feared originally that he broke a rib or two. Underwent x-rays and MRIs and all that, as you would imagine, and it came back that it was just a contusion. Michelle, have you ever bruised a rib? Or broken one?
I have not.
I have bruised my ribs, and I'll just put it this way. I was in unimaginable pain. The idea of breaking one of those?
I know.
No thanks.
Yeah, I've heard that's not great. No, interestingly enough, I've never broken a bone. So I have no idea. I've never experienced that anywhere on my body, let alone the ribs
or anything like that.
Never broken a bone?
No.
Wow.
Okay, Michelle.
I played sports, too.
I know. That's the thing about this. I can tell you. I broke my collarbone when I was in grade school. That's the biggest broken bone in my body I've ever. But, like, in high school, Michelle, I played football. I'm looking at my feet, and I can kind of count on all 10 of my toes. I can count on, like, 4 or 5 of them that I have them broken at some point playing football.
I killed my ankle dancing.
Okay, but just a sprain.
But it was just a really bad sprain that I probably should have had looked at, but I didn't.
As we all should have. Come on now. But yeah, so you're playing through injuries this time of year, and Rudy, obviously, it'd be good to see him back on the court, because Jazz fans love that guy. He's been effusive in his praise of his time in Utah, and frankly, was a guy who didn't want to leave, to be honest about that. Tonight, though, so the other players for the Minnesota Timberwolves, Monty Morris is slated as questionable, along with Kyle Anderson, but no Karl Anthony Towns. He is out for 4 weeks after he underwent lateral meniscus surgery. He's going to be out until probably probably the postseason really begins is what it looks like right now. So this is not necessarily the Minnesota Timberwolves, if the guys slated as questionable don't play, that you would have imagined coming in, but they're still very formidable. And when Anthony Edwards is on the court, Michelle, and we've all seen his highlights, that dude is a walking highlight reel.
I mean, we always knew, right, that the Jazz were going to have their work cut out for them. Sounds like, you know, there's maybe some circumstances that can make that a little easier for them.
Sure.
I think, you know, last night's win perhaps boosts some confidence, too. So there's always the possibility that you see this team come into that game with a little added confidence that they were able to beat a team without, you know, some of their older, more established players, that they did with their young guys. And if we add in those older players, that, you know, maybe we're in good shape and we can handle this, especially if the Timberwolves are a little shorthanded. So that's going to be, to me, that's very interesting to watch and see how that plays out. It could ultimately not end up mattering, as you pointed out. You know, even with people missing, the Timberwolves are still very good. But you know, on the other hand, there's maybe some things that are playing into the Jazz's favor that could cause an upset. So, well, it'll be an interesting game.
Yeah, it will. And the other thing about this, Michelle, Rudy, as far as I'm aware, has still kept his house up in the foothills above Salt Lake City. I wonder if the Timberwolves are hanging out there, because they're going to be here for a few days at least.
I mean, why not? It's a great, like, we're going to have pretty decent weather, I think, for the weekend, so why not?
Go have a barbecue or something, you know, fire up the grill. Like,
I'm sure the views from his house are probably stunning, so. Well,
anybody who's followed Rudy, trust me, he posted some photos once upon a time on Instagram and the like, and yes, Michelle, the views are, they're immaculate from where his house was perched.
Hang out at a house or hang out in a hotel room.
Well, okay. And let's also be clear. They're not staying in your residence inn at the Marriott. They're staying over the Grand America or the Hotel Monaco. Those are the two that the NBA teams come to here in Salt Lake City. It's stipulated in the CBA they have to stay in a 5-star hotel. So they're not loving it.
But it's still a hotel room. Like, even the nicest rooms, it's still not like staying in a house.
Yeah, well, and even if they, okay, here's the thing. If they have to sleep in the hotel, guess what? Fire up the team bus, we're going over to Rudy's place, we're getting dinner, we're hanging out, and then we're going back to the hotel to sleep. This seems natural.
Sure, that's fine. I think that's acceptable.
We'll see. It's kind of an interesting dynamic, and it's a lot of fun, and we get to watch this play out. Now, the stretch run here for the Jazz, Michelle, it's going to be curious to see, because, as I mentioned, it's the first time that in NBA history you're going to have three rookies. That'd be Taylor Hendricks, Bryce Sensabaugh, and Keontae George in the starting lineup tonight. It's a huge opportunity for these young guys, because the biggest thing right now for this Jazz team is for those young players to show Jazz management, and I'm including Danny Ainge, Justin Zanuck, and even their head coach Will Hardy, etc., what type of player they are, and if they figure to be part of the future plans for the Jazz as well.
I mean, you know, there's a lot riding on this.
Yes.
We've talked ad nauseum about this is a team that's trying to figure out who the building blocks are and who the dead weight is and how to go about upgrading in order to get themselves where they want to be. So, yeah, we're kind of in doing die time now. And even if you lose games, I think you still need to show well. Like, that's just kind of what it is. If you want to earn and keep a spot and be a part of the future of what this franchise could possibly be.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we will come back on the other side. We will dive into technical fouls, talk about some of the more bizarre things in the world of sports. Michelle was in Las Vegas. I'm sure she's got something that happened down there in Sin City that can entertain us. But we'll figure it out. We'll get to it on the other side. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You won't feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal file, 69, offense. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5 DKSL Sports Zone. It's time now for technical fouls. Michelle, I want to start with yours because I did see this on social media, and it's a very good point, but it's just kind of a case in point of what the era of the Pac-12 has been. Please explain.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't anything new or unusual,
no.
But it's funny to think about. So you have the Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas, and you can't get the Pac-12 network in any of the hotel rooms. The particular article I looked at was talking about the New York, which was the media hotel. That's where I was at, was New York through both conference tournaments. Uh-huh. I got asked all the time, so did you watch any of the other games? And I'm like, how? Like, how am I supposed to do that? I don't understand the question unless I go over to the stadium, which was only a 5-minute walk. But it's like, you know, I know I'm not the only person in that boat. Basketball is not the only thing I cover. And so to be in a stadium all day trying to watch other games and the noise and then trying to concentrate on other things I need to kind of take care of, not going to happen. So I track the games on the trusty Pac-12 network app to get score updates. But I never really saw anything that was going on in the other games outside of the ones I had to cover with Utah. So,
oh my gosh,
pour one out to the Pac-12.
Another facepalm moment among many for the Pac-12.
Well, it's so illustrative of what the Pac-12 has dealt with. It's like they couldn't get it on the major network, like the major TV providers originally, and eventually they just kind of gave up the fight, Michelle. But yeah, it's like you're staying in the media hotel for the tournament you're covering, and oh, by the way, you can't watch this game.
Yep.
It's like, okay, way to go, guys. All right. Jason, what do you got for us this week?
Okay, so this time I'm calling out the NFL. So,
Let's go.
Yeah, sure. So, of course, we have the legal tampering period that happens before free agency starts, and the legal tampering period started on Monday, and then free agency actually officially started on Wednesday. Well, in two instances, Kirk Cousins and Saquon Barkley, maybe there was a little tampering before Monday, if you believe third-party reports that perhaps Saquon Barkley talked. I mean, look, here's the thing. I mean, come on, really? They maybe talked to a guy beforehand, and you have this legal tampering period. I mean, the NFL kills me. I mean, it's like they fine players and suspend them for gambling, and yet you can't watch an NFL game without them putting the odds up on the screen every 5 minutes of you can bet on this and bet on that. But no, the players, no, can't gamble. No, that's taboo there, of course. So I just, the NFL with their whole rules and their whole and it's impossible to follow, and it's impossible to know whether or not people are breaking the rules or not, and it's just complete nuts. But that's kind of how the NFL's run and has been run for a long time now.
Yeah, it's here's the thing. This is always going to happen. So for you to pick out one or two instances and try and go after them, great. Way to go, guys.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, nobody ever talks to anybody else prior to the legal tampering period. That never happens.
Right.
Well, and to bring in an NBA example, do you remember the Jalen Brunson situation when he went to the New York Knicks?
Oh, yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
So he obviously left the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks were all miffed. They're like, well, his dad was tampering with him. Folks, I get that his dad's an assistant coach with the New York Knicks, but it's a father-son relationship.
Yeah, it's his dad.
Yeah.
I mean, was he supposed to not talk to his dad? Sorry, Dad. You know.
I can't talk to you about work.
That's right.
Yeah.
Father's Day rolls around, but I can't talk to you. Sorry, Dad. Jeez.
It's so weird, but hey, welcome to the NFL. They want all the headlines, good or bad, because you know what? They still make money either way.
Yep.
It feels like,
all publicity is good unless they misspell your name. There you go.
All right. Okay. What can I ask both of y'all? What would it take for you guys to steal like a truck full of bobbleheads?
I heard this story.
I don't think there's anything in the world that would make me do that. Bobbleheads don't really interest me. And, like, I've just never really had sticky fingers for anything, so to speak. So
unless they were solid gold bobbleheads.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay, so Jaromir Jagr is one of the all-timers in NHL. Played for the Pittsburgh Penguins forever. He's actually still playing pro hockey, if I recall. Like, they've tried to put him in the Hall of Fame, but he isn't retired yet. He's still playing over in, like, the Czech Republic, where he's from. He owns runs his team and he still plays for him. He's like 53 now. But the Pittsburgh Penguins were planning on Thursday night to honor him by having a Jaromir Jagr bobblehead night. But the team said the shipment that was carrying the bobbleheads was stolen after its arrival in California. And they don't know where they're at. So, okay, here's the thing. I think there's like 18,000 of these things.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Do you think somebody like stole like the container, just thinking I'm gonna sell whatever's in it? They open it up, they're like,
nobody's gonna notice these missing, or be able to figure out that I'm the one that has them.
Hey, I have an exclusive Jaromir Jagr bobblehead over here, plus 17,999 of his friends. Would you like some?
Time to call up your connections in the Czech Republic. That's what it sounds like to me.
So all fans who did attend the game were given a voucher to pick up the bobblehead at a later date. They said the location and dates for pickup will be announced when the shipment is safely located or new bobbleheads are produced and made available for distribution.
Oh my gosh.
Good times. Yeah,
can I give a just special shout out to?
Yes.
So on my drive in today, uh-huh, I was behind someone that was eating a bowl of cereal. And I
hold on, what?
Yes.
Nice.
And
nice.
And he entered the freeway eating said bowl of cereal. So, you know, shout out to you, sir. Technical foul on you. Dangerous, stupid.
Yeah.
And on top of that, like, he's like my parents' age. So, like, it wasn't like some college bruh. It was like a boomer that should know better.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, don't do that. Don't eat cereal.
The highway's the safest place, though, right? Because it's all straight. Oh, you don't have to turn, right?
Yes, that's it. Yes, it's safe.
Yeah.
High speeds have never, ever caused issues. Wow, that is... Yeah, don't do that. That's just PSA right now. Don't eat cereal while you're driving a vehicle.
Among a long list of other things.
But here's the thing. You're going to make a mess, period. Like, there's no way... Anyways, I digress. Real quick, guys, we talk about Australia often. I talked last week about the kangaroos that invaded that golf course, you remember? Well, I got another one from Australia real quick here. A snake catcher was called out to a home in Queensland, Australia, where the second most venomous snake in the world was found, quote, literally trying to hide among the undies in a resident's bedroom.
Ew!
Yeah, so snake catcher Daniel Rumsey has a video of this up where a juvenile eastern brown snake was in a woman's bedroom, literally just kind of slithering through the undies, like literally trying to blend in.
So many jokes. So many jokes that I am not going to go with. Nope.
Trust me, the headline I found this under had an incredible joke that is not appropriate for me. So we'll just leave it there. But yeah, so... check your dirty clothes, folks, because you don't want the second most venomous snake in the world. Like the eastern brown snake, it'll kill you in a matter of minutes, like if it bites you.
Yeah, just another reason to never set foot in Australia.
Apparently so.
What is going on down under?
Everything in Australia wants to kill you. That's the biggest thing.
Ugh.
That's just the long and short of it. All right. We will get back on the other side here. We'll talk about some college football. We got spring camp underway up at Utah. BYU is about halfway through. We will dig into what we have learned so far / what we still want to learn as spring camp rolls on. More to come. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.